Hello and welcome to Sienna and Slate. The name Sienna and Slate pays homage to our ancestral ways of knowledge sharing. Sienna, taken from the color of clay from the earth that was used as a medium and writing tool, and slate, referencing a blank slate, a tablet, or a stone. These are the conversations that don't get told anywhere else. Through a collective of deep conversation, storytelling, and sage advice, we celebrate the interconnected aspects of genius, resilience, scholarship, and well-being. We're writers, thinkers, and doers. You're in the right place. I'm Dr. Keo, and in this episode, I share space with Lucas Valouche and Dr. Melvin Murphy. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad that we were able to connect, and I'm so glad that you answered the call to join me on this show. I'd like to give you all just a few minutes to introduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit about the work you're doing. Tell us a little bit about who you are in relation to the work that you're doing.
And it's great to be here. I can start. I'm Lucas, and I am by training a journalist. I worked as a print journalist for a number of years doing environmental reporting, and eventually found my way from there with a family and kids to and a real bills to pay to working in a similar way on corporate storytelling, which I do at Microsoft right now. Melvin, over to you.
And wow, I was trying to say something else, came up with something else. My name is Melvin Murphy, and I am a business research scientist and professor of marketing and business here at a college in outside of Washington, D.C. And I give speeches, training seminars, workshops, and I also write books. And Lucas and I actually met when I worked at Microsoft, and we were both strangers. So thank you for inviting us.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so interested to get into this story. So Dr. Melvin Murphy and I met and crossed paths when he contributed to the Academic Storytelling Project. So, you know, in the Academic Storytelling Project, I ask about your academic experiences, how did you get here? What are the advice that you need to give other academics or those that are trying to navigate the academic space? And our conversation just expanded right into to more than the time that we had allotted. So we just began to talk about so many other things and the aspects of resilience, of course, and scholarship and our work and how they're interconnected and how they intersect. So,
and I got to talk to your husband. I mean, we were all over the place.
I know. And we've just been talking about all of these things since then and have continuing these conversations. And I said, we have to talk about the work that you're doing now. So I introduced you, or I invited you to then have a conversation about the work that you and Lucas are doing. And you said, absolutely. So the book that you are working on, and you're going to tell us how we got here, but the book that you're working on is Crossing the Race Line, One Murder, Two Strangers, and Journey to Healing and Change. So how did we get here? Tell us the backstory of this, because this is so amazing.
It's your fault, Lucas. I'll start because then Lucas can roll right into his side. So, of course, we were working at Microsoft in Seattle, and Lucas and I were total strangers. Although we worked in the same division, two different departments, and our departments worked together. And Lucas and I were really getting ready to have a meeting for a project we were working on. But also at the time, George Floyd had been murdered. And as you know, the world was turned upside down. There were riots. It was at the height of everything, and it was very, very, very bad. And I was one of the few Black people at work that people were checking on me, like, how are you doing with all of this? And I'm like, I couldn't understand why I was being asked, how am I doing with all of this? This is nothing new for me. This has been a part of my life all my life. And so I got kind of frustrated. I was sitting in my office. I got frustrated. I said, you know what? I'm going to turn the tables. I'm going to start asking them how they're doing with all of this. And it just so happened, Lucas and I were meeting, and he was the first person. And it's something in my head was like, okay, he's getting ready to ask me how I'm doing with all this. And so I beat him to the punch. And I said, how are you doing with all of this? And he gave me an answer that kind of placated me. and we went on with our meeting. And I'm going to let Lucas take it from there.
Yeah, and I kind of want to unwind it to a little bit before that moment, because when I, that day, it was the next day after that George Floyd was killed, and everyone was obviously in turmoil, and I knew I had a meeting with Melvin that day, and he was someone that the first Black person I was going to talk to about this, and I was spent a lot of time thinking, like going through a whole exercise of fear and sort of uncomfortableness around what I could do, what I could say. I was sort of a tipping point for me personally. I was so angry and so frustrated, but I didn't know what to do or how to channel that. And I was literally shaking when I was driving in that morning. I remember, you know, my hands on the steering wheel, like, I need to do something. I need to say something. I need to talk to Melvin and ask him, you know, how he's doing and if I could offer some support. And I didn't know how to do that. And I got to work. Eventually we got to the meeting, and I was literally trying to ask him, you know, how he was doing and see if I could offer something. And I was like shocked. I really was shocked when he turned the table on me and asked me how I was doing. And I think I did say something, you know, like pretty, you know, I'm sure very poorly put together and uncomfortably put together. And essentially, I didn't feel like I had done what I had set out to do and really do something. And so when Melvin turned the story around and asked me, like, how are you doing? I struggled and all of that, but I then felt like there was a moment, a door opening that happened, because he invited me in and asked me, and I, you know, I didn't have anything to say at the moment, but when I went back home and I sat down and had a minute to think about it, I was like, he invited me in. And I sat down at my keyboard, and how I think best anyway is not in the spur of the moment, but in writing. So as a writer, I sat down and wrote him some thoughts about his opening the door to me and asking me how I felt. And I tried to work through that and began talking to him about some of my white privilege and some of the things that I take for granted, and how, why is it this really giant tragedy that has to get me moving, and sort of the self-loathing that goes along with that. And I channeled it into a letter and wrote to him, shared my feelings, and then that's what got us started.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. So really quickly, you said you didn't do what you had set out to do, right? So when you had come in that day for work, what is it exactly that you set out to do?
Which is, I don't know what I wanted to do, something meaningful and ask him and help him in some way. But it was like, almost like too little too late, right? It was already happened. As Melvin says, Black people have been dealing with this with many other cases of this kind of brutality. Mm-hmm. And this was just the latest incident. Like, and I was a white person sitting there without, you know, letting the world go by and not making it my problem. And but now here I was, like, feeling like I was at a tipping point where I had to do something. So I wanted to do something meaningful, but I don't know. Like, there was no answer that came to me as I drove in that morning other than to say, I'm here, I care, and try not to make it sound trite or, you know, or shallow or anything like that. And that's pretty much impossible, right? In the circumstances, you can't go from doing nothing to something meaningful in, you know, 5 minutes, right? So it was very hard. And, you know, I started on that journey of doing something meaningful when I sat down and wrote out my thoughts and talked about my privilege and talked about my inaction and sitting on my hands and all of that. And that was the beginning of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Murphy, you were going to say something.
No. Basically, I received the letter the next day at work, and I'm like, what is this? You know, and I read it and I said, oh my goodness, I've never received a letter from a white man, you know, asking me how I was doing. And so I responded back to him, and you know, he wrote me this page, and mine was about a paragraph, like, thank you for your heartfelt letter, blah, and I thought it was over. And then I got another one, and I said, hey, there's something to this, and I got him on the phone and said, hey, we should continue this. And no question is off limits for me. And so that's how it actually started. We started because we were trying to help each other. And it wasn't, it was later when we realized that we had something.
And so
And 2 years later, we finished the manuscript.
Yeah. So how were you, so when you initially got this letter, what went through your mind? What were you thinking or feeling like? Like, tell us what that felt like, that moment.
It was like, I'm like, what is this? You know, like, what, you know, I'm getting this letter and I'm reading it and I'm like, I'm not processing this thing here. And so I had to read it twice. I wrote it twice and I said, oh, okay. Because he clearly said in the letter that this is how he communicates. He communicates better in writing. And so I got it. So I got it. Mm-hmm. And I responded back to him.
Yeah. Yeah. But Go ahead.
So Melvin had the, so when he saw a couple of the letters and saw what was happening, I think he saw something when he said he's right. He saw an opportunity. And so what came up with this notion of like, how do I, so like of asking each other questions very explicitly, the part of keeping it going wasn't just continuing to write letters. It was, let's ask each other hard questions that white people don't ask Black people and Black people don't ask white people. Mm-hmm. And just to start finding out where we are on this continuum and try to move somewhere. And, you know, like I said in very, very specifically in my early letters, like I, you know, like I felt like that was, this is a journey that white people need to get on and Black people are already experiencing all these things. And I just was thankful to Melvin from the very beginning that he was willing to help me have this conversation. You know, he didn't have to do that. It wasn't his burden to help me as a white person deal with, you know, my lack of action and doing anything about this, right? He made a leap and was willing to have the conversation for him, it was a chance to ask me some questions about why I was so passive for all my life or whatever that, you know, however that came about. But the point was that he really went, he figured out that we could move this thing and have something if we started asking each other hard questions about, you know, that we don't normally ask each other.
And it wasn't asking each other hard questions because we knew we were going to write a book. That didn't come into play at all. Okay, at all. And we were doing this for each other. And let me say for your audience, Lucas and I are not experts in DEI. Okay. We're not experts in diversity. Lucas is a storyteller and journalist. And my specialty is marketing and communications. Mm-hmm. We did this for ourselves. And when it all came about, that's how all of this came about. We were not trying to do it because I had questions I always wanted to ask a white person.
Mm-hmm.
And so like Lucas said, I knew that it wasn't my responsibility to help him. I knew that going in. But then I thought, what better person than me?
Yeah. Yeah. I wanna ask about that because there for both of you, there was a bit of courage. You had to put the ego aside to say for Lucas to even, because you didn't know how he would respond to this. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like you all were friends. Yes. So you took a risk in thinking, I'm going to go ahead and put myself out here because this is the way that I, you know, can extend myself. This is the way through writing that I, you know, am comfortable. So maybe we can start having a conversation that way. And then for you, Dr. Murphy, for them to respond, both of you, it took some courage and that bravery to enter that space with the guard down, with the curious nature of, okay, well then how do we navigate this and how do we navigate this conversation and what might this entail or look like? Because both of you had questions that you wanted answered on both sides.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And that is amazing. The thing about it is you know, for me, it was, you know, I had a lot of things running through my head. Of course, you know, the riots were taking place all over the world. I mean, it was a really volatile situation. We all know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I worried like what my Black friends would say and, me helping this white guy, you know, wake up to whatever. I mean, I did worry about that a little bit, but then I had to say, but as a Christian man, you know, I've got to be that person. I'm a good person to do this, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Especially if he extended and said, will you?
Well, no, he never asked. He never asked. He never asked. He sent me the letter. I responded to the letter. He wrote a second letter. And I said, hey, there's something to this. And then I got him on the phone and I said, we should continue this and no questions off limits. That's really how it happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I came into it with a lot of, you know, I was scared, I have to say, and questioning why I, you know, should be asking Melvin these questions. And, you know, there is a point to be made for white people like myself, which is that it's our responsibility to move the needle on this, not somebody like Melvin who's in it and dealing with the consequences of it. It should be the people like myself. And that's, you know, like, but having a conversation about it and having real talk is a way to start it, you know, start me down that journey. And it's like, yes, like I was asking a lot of Melvin, and I, you know, like I think back to it, and like some of the things that I said and like, you know, sort of stereotypical traps falling into about like assumptions and things like that. There were, we had to work through it all. And then there's like building trust and getting past, you know, like being terrified to like really getting into a little bit of comfortableness, you know, being comfortable, more willing to share and talk and speak about it. And that was a journey. Like it took a lot of work and Melvin did a lot of great work helping me move along. And, you know, like it takes a lot to do that. You have to really be willing to work with someone and help them. And, you know, like it's a privilege that I got someone to help me who worked through it. And, you know, I hope that people, the point of this is I hope that people can have similar conversations instead of being scared, because my point of view on this is white people are scared. Like I use the analogy of my father who skipped out of town when I was two and wanted to always reconnect with me, but he was afraid to because he had already abandoned me, you know, for all those years. And like, he's afraid. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how white people feel about this. Like we've done so poorly on this for so long that we don't feel like we have permission to get in there and mix it up with somebody who's in the middle of it. So like I had to ask Melvin, and I didn't ask him like in that explicit way, but I did share in my letters, like that is a privilege for me to be able to have these conversations with you. And it's a privilege if someone else wants to do that for another white person. And you know, like everyone who's a white person who hears this, who wants to do something about this, isn't necessarily going to find someone like Melvin to help them, but maybe they can be inspired what Melvin says in our book. And like, you know, like that's all, like you have to find the way in your own path to try to get some help and talk through this. That's the point, and however it manifests. And it may not be that everyone can have someone like Melvin help them, but sure, that shouldn't stop anybody who's listening to this from starting something. Start talking to someone. It doesn't have to be another Black person. If it is, that's a beautiful thing. But somebody, have conversations, begin this conversation of moving yourself towards taking action.
I think now Lucas is sat there and he said, hey, it was beautiful for me to do this for him. But please don't think that I didn't learn from Lucas as well, because I did.
Yeah.
Okay. So I learned a lot about myself. Okay. I learned about the, you know, his culture and the race as well. So it really was a mutual learning, and we came from a place of love and learning and not indictment. Mm-hmm. Because I easily could have been that person to indict him.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not going to do that. I am going to let him get to know me, let him get to know my culture. And like he said, it took some time to really get to start trusting each other in this.
Yeah. So give us some examples, both of you. Give us some examples or some experiences, you know, in the trust process and in the conversation. And, you know, you're talking about these experiences that were maybe fearful, you know, tell us about some of those experiences, like when and what happened. Give us some juicy details here.
Well, so I can say, like, at the beginning, I was very afraid. So I was super, super careful, right? Everything was like, let me think about this. Am I saying something that's offensive? Am I saying something? Am I saying this in the right way? Am I using, making assumptions that are wrong or that will anger Melvin? Like, I was afraid. Like, I had to work through that and get more comfortable. And when I saw, so the moments that were where that started to change, and it took time, and it went, you know, it was a process, right? It took a lot of time because I was very afraid, I have to say.
Like, I was like, I don't want to hear those general questions, those general answers, those empty answers. Real, I'm like, no, exactly. I'm not doing this.
So it was more the harder part. Like, okay, you know, like bearing my soul to, you know, like where I'm wrong and where I make mistakes and sharing those stories. Where I was more afraid was to ask Melvin hard questions, and like, and he wanted hard questions. He's like, don't throw, you know, these weak ass things that are just, you know, platitudes, you know. So that was, and so I got more comfortable along those lines as time went on, and and got into some of his other you know, parts of him, and, you know, like learning his complex, you know, story as a human, you know, and uncovering that and kind of nosing around and asking questions about things that sometimes, you know, he didn't want to chat about. Like, you know, the military was his time in the military was like something that he was like, you know, I don't really want to get into. So like, you finding where the barriers are and pushing and looking and all that stuff. And that's becoming friends too, right? Like, that's about the process of learning who each other, you know, what makes each other tick. And
by the way, he didn't let that go. He didn't let it go. So,
well, you know, like you have to sort of, like for me, like I felt uncomfortable all the time. Right. But I also wanted to make it worth Melvin's while to feel like he was moving on a journey too. And I certainly wasn't going to move him on the journey of, you know, like, the horrible things that brought us together, and but like there may be parts of the journey that could help him grow, as he said, you know, in other parts of his life. And so it was just trying to be human together, I think, more comfortable over time.
Lucas, I think it was we both had to get there with the hard questions, because we didn't want to offend anybody, but I knew that I wasn't going to allow you to give me these basic answers, because it would have been a waste of time. And so I think what we did, Dr. K, is that we crafted our questions to the point where, you know, we said you have to answer at least the last question that we put, that we write to, no matter what that question was. And let me say this too, we hit some potholes, we hit some landmines. Okay.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
I'll give you one story that's in the book. Lucas had basically made this comment, and I don't know what we were talking about, but I remember it very well. And he said that he loved to see Black successful people. Okay. And then he followed up by saying, sports and entertainers.
Okay.
Oh my God. I went through the roof. I'm like, and I told, you know, I kind of did this litany. We are more than sports and entertainers, and gave them a history. You know, who do you think did a cataract surgery? And so that really made me mad, because we're more than just sports entertainers. We've done a lot. We do a lot, and we've created the missile guided system and all of these things. And then Lucas came back, and once I pointed it out to him, he basically said, "Oh, okay, I see. I apologize. I was just using a reference that I knew." And yes. I'm like, "Okay, you need to broaden your references."
Yes.
Well, and it touched a sensitive point, right? Like for Melvin, it was because, you know, he's been, you know, as he said before, like people assume that he's one of those people, you know, if he's successful. There's a stereotypes that they're just loaded on top of stereotypes here, right? Mm-hmm. So like I had to like broaden my horizons. I think a whole series of things happened after that, including Melvin sharing with a bunch of things that I should go check out. And, you know, like whether it's like books or, you know, documentaries or different things to understand it. And we talk about that in our letters, and like I get my daughter involved and we're watching, you know, so it was just a whole stream of things that happened as we grew together. Like we had over the benefit of time. So like I can actually do some of the things that we talked about.
Wait a minute, Lucas, you're jumping over something. You're jumping over. Let's go back. Okay, this is, I think for me, and I don't know about Lucas, but this is when I began to really trust him. He was talking about his
book,
and he was talking about the video. So I made a list of movies that I think he should watch, you know, Red Tails but more so the documentaries. I had him watch a documentary on the Black Church. It was on PBS. I sent that to him. And I said, hey, because he had recently asked me a question about my faith. And so I'm like, if you really, really want to understand why I lean on my faith and Black people, you've got to watch this movie on the Black Church. And I think it was the first series with that was airing. And when he came back, he watched it. And when he told me that he watched it with his daughter. And when he went to watch the second one without his daughter got upset with him and said, we were going to watch this together. That's when it all changed for me. And it told me, okay, he is serious about this, that he is bringing his most precious gift. Okay. His daughter. That's when my trust changed, and I knew he was serious.
Yeah, and not only is he bringing his family, his daughters into it, but he's doing the work.
Right.
He's not just asking for all the answers, but he's going to research and do the work as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's, as far as flipping it around, you know, Melvin has told the story before of like making assumptions about me, and like when he kind of, his jaw hit the floor when I sort of unwound the story about like my background as coming from kind of basically.
I thought he was rich. I thought he was rich and everything had been handed to him.
Yeah, and I grew up off the grid in rural Arizona on a ranch with hippie parents and no the utilities or things that everybody, you know, would think of. And we were very poor. And also at some point I had the opportunity to sort of unwind this story. And then he had no idea, like, at all. And, like, he couldn't believe when he read that, you know. And so I just remember his being totally shocked and telling me that he had made a lot of assumptions about me. And you know, that's what this was about, right? Unpacking that and trying to learn about each other and where we've been and not, you know, making those assumptions.
I had to call it. Remember, Lucas? I had to call Lucas and I had to apologize to him. After that particular letter, because I put my bias on him. Mm-hmm. I am a Black man putting my bias on this white man and assuming because he's white. That was so mind blowing to me that I had biased. Okay, that I assumed. It was a big learning lesson for me, though. It really was to get to know somebody before you judge them.
Yeah.
And all these stereotypes have come preloaded into us. And like, even, you know, even when we got down, you know, farther in, I think there was just times where that, you know, we had to sort of unwind that, you know, those conceptions that we have about each other and each other's race in other parts, you know, just assuming, making assumptions about people. And so we had, that's what happens over time, is you get to get past some of that. And then when you find something that's like, what, you have a chance, you just have the trust to work on it. And I think it's a, you know, beautiful part of this. So like, if you intend to go into something like this and have conversations with somebody about race and about privilege, you can get so much more out of it. Like, I just can't believe, you know, how rich the, you know, the learnings have been over time, and just all the things that have come from this. You know, like, there's so much more than just working on the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us a bit, one, what you're learning from this, the broad implications for all of us, and then what you're learning. And then two, how do we do this? How do we, you know, just regular people in society that walk to Starbucks or go to the grocery store or cross paths with someone, what's even the first step?
What are we learning? I'm learning that everything that glitters isn't gold. Man, what I mean by that is, you may see somebody walking down the street with the best suit on or the best dress and the most expensive, you know, hairdo or whatever, is that we all carry burdens. We all carry burdens that we're working with. Do not assume because this person is dressed to the nines that, you know, they may be having all kinds of issues that you don't know about. Okay. And you can't judge somebody, you know, that old saying, you can't judge a book by its cover. I learned that I need to get to know people. I learned that I had bias. I learned that I need to work on that. And what do you need to do this? And then Lucas can answer his. I would say you have to open yourself up to having these kind of conversations with people who don't look like you, whether you're Black, whether you're Asian, or whatever it is. You've got to open yourself up. And I mean, open yourself up. You can't, like Chris Rock says, let your representatives come and speak for you, because that's not going to work. That's not going to work. You have to put yourself on a line and let people know who you are, because there were some things that I would never talk about ever publicly or with a stranger. Only with the people that I probably knew. And Lucas was able to get to that point. So I would say try to find someone. Don't go, you know, looking for somebody like, because I want to do this. No, it's going to have to happen naturally. And if you have minority friends at work or in your organizations, and you actually have a question or something you don't understand, you can go to them and ask them, say, listen, I would love to talk with you about something. I don't understand it. It may come out wrong, but I'm trying to learn. But you got to make sure you have the right person, because everybody's not going to be like me. Everybody's not going to be like me.
Yes, exactly right. And before you say that, because both of you have brought this notion of burden in as well, right? So Lucas initially said it wasn't your burden, Dr. Murphy, to answer his questions.
It's not.
Right. And and so you're bringing that in as well, as when you say, you know, if you ask someone a question, because it's not their burden to educate you on this as well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You got to be very careful, because you got to know who, if you have any kind of relationship with that person, you know, hopefully they will be kind enough and educated enough to be able to answer it, because some people may shy away because they're scared too, whether they're minorities, and they don't want to get into this because they don't know how they're going to respond to it. They may get upset, you know? Yeah. So it's a lot of things that you have to put into place before you go out there and try to put yourself out there to try to do what Lucas and I have done.
Lucas will agree with
me on this, that I've told him that I think this was some kind of divine intercession on that this happened to us. We were complete strangers. Complete strangers. Met Lucas once.
Yes.
In passing.
Yes.
And we were very, however you want to look at it, you're the the spiritual one, Melvin, but I also am, you know, I think it was a blessing in some form. A story. So I want to take a, because this is about trying to, I think, address white privilege and white people's inaction. I want to make sure that address that specifically in the context of what you were saying. We had a talk, Melvin invited me and we went to talk to the association he sits on the board for recently. And there's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. We had a great conversation. We kind of struck a nerve with those folks across the board. And in the question and answer session, there was, you know, some black people who came off mute and shared some of their thoughts, and a couple, and some white people also, and they were touched. Right. And one of the leaders who's a white person said, you know, when a black person said she'd be willing to talk to some white people as sort of an olive branch. Right. And it was important to me to point out that the white person said, "Hey, I'm available if you want to do this." And I'm like, no, that's not the way this is going. Yeah. This is the white people need to take the initiative. And that's what we suck at, basically. We're not willing to take the initiative. We're afraid and we're sitting inert. And I just want to reiterate that the action there is for the white person to acknowledge that they have privilege. They're part of this problem and to take action. And they should be the one who reaches out and asks someone to, and if the person is willing, then that is a privilege and an awesome thing. And I just want to make sure, like, what is the first step you ask? Like, take an action as a white person and ask if you have the chance. You should ask for someone to have a conversation with you. And for me,
as a black person, the first step is to be willing to accept it and work with them.
If you are willing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And hopefully someone is. And this woman was, and I was so pleased to hear her say that. But it was even then that needed to be flipped around. Like, she was making the overtures and instead she was being accepting, but the white people were still in the same thing in that meeting. After they heard us talk, they were still afraid to say, I have the right to reach out and take an action and ask you if you're willing to talk to me. And that's where we have to get past that. And that's the fear you have to overcome. And like, I'll segue into like answering your question, which is like the learning for me is, you know, like, you have to not only be willing to take that step, but then also really reflect on like your privilege. Like, I had to peel back question after question. What is it? You know, my first reaction is like, yes, white people are like that, but I'm not like that, right? And then I have to get back past that, unwind that. And it was an exercise that I went through, and a lot of the hard questions was like, how am I? And then I had to like just say, okay, embrace my role in this bad behavior that white people have, whatever it was, and try to unpack and unwind and say, yes, I do have white privilege. I do have, I am a sort of a passive participant in this, and I'm not speaking up when I should, and all those things, right? So like, part of you ask someone who's black to have a conversation with you, and then you immediately need to start working and reflecting on how you're part of the problem as a white person, right? That is, you cannot have a meaningful conversation. If I wasn't willing to unwind my privilege and start to address that right away, Melvin would have not had a conversation with me. You know, like, I had to get there quickly so that he would find some meaning in it. And that's so the first step to taking action is try to have a conversation and then have meaningful reflection on yourself and your part in this, your complicity. And then you can start. Like, if you don't have a real, if you're not willing to get right to it and to start talking about it as a white person, you're not going to have a conversation with a black person. They're not, I mean, why would they put themselves out there? And if you're not willing to talk about it and take some ownership of this. And that, so that's, to me, is like, A, go for it. Ask someone if they willingly go for it and talk to you, be real and work on it. And that's how you get started.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So another thing, when before we hit record for this, you said I want Lucas, I want to make sure that you know, this is our story and we're talking about, you know, our experience. And that's exactly right. Because, yeah, this is not, it's not to say that when you talk to one Black person, you're talking to all Black people. That's not a monolith. That is their experience. So you have to come through with that context and that lens as well, because this is your experience and where you've come from. And you all have had this conversation about backgrounds and childhoods and military experiences and all of these things. And all of those things will come into play as well when you have conversations with other people. It is not that Lucas speaks for all white people, and it is not that Dr. Murphy speaks for all Black men. That is not how this works.
But you will feel that, though. You will feel as if you are taking on that responsibility, and you have to know that you're not.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
There is a nuance.
And you may
there.
Have to articulate that. Like, this is my experience. This is not for all. So don't go out and say that all Black people do this or that,
You can't, but I also want to put the disclaimer in there. You said Black men. I am not speaking for all Black men, although, you know, I've been Black a long time. I'm not speaking for Black men. This is my experience, but I also want to say that I am not omitting Black women from this either. But I can't speak on their behalf. I'm speaking on my behalf, my experience. This is what we did. This is, and we want to share with people because it has worked for us.
And I, as far as my side of things, I just think like I am trying to just show a potential route for a white person who feels like they've been on the fence for, you know, their whole lives and have saw these kind of crimes happen and really want to do something. There is a path where you just start to have some conversations, and sometimes like you won't have a Melvin to talk to, but you might have another member of your family or someone you know who's just willing to talk and help you work on it. You don't have to do this. I obviously I'm super blessed because Melvin is the real deal and can give me all of the insights that he has.
He's very candid.
But like some people are not gonna, it doesn't mean that everybody can have that. So you need to have a conversation and start talking and not being quiet and passive. Like that's the only thing. Like and maybe as you work on it with someone else who's close to you and you both make some progress, then you're gonna be farther along in your journey and then you can actually, be more prepared to have a real conversation with a Black person. You know, like you grow into it. It doesn't have to be a straight line conversation like we had. Do it in some way. Just make sure something happens.
I wanted to show Lucas. I really, sometimes I was calculated in our discussions and in the questions that I was asking, because I wanted to show him the real side of my life as a Black man living in two Americas. I wanted him to really see it. I wanted him to really feel it. And so therefore he would totally understand what's going on. And he does. He does now. Today, I know he does.
And how did you demonstrate that?
Huh?
How did you demonstrate that?
That to show him how I live in America?
Live in two Americas,
We would talk about it. I would say, this is what I think, from my perspective as a Black man, I want you to know why I think that way and so on and so forth. I had to show him these things. We had to talk about it. We had to go through it. And he was like, I get it. And I wasn't indicting him. I was just, I wanted to show him what I go through every day. Like when my car if I get stopped by a police officer, I am shaking in my boots. Okay. Or I'm being followed in a department store and I can probably afford to buy anything in there, but I'm being followed. Okay. Or if I, like when Lucas puts on a suit and goes into an office building, they're going to look at him as a businessman. If I put on a suit and go into an office, they might look at me as a sports entertainer or something like this. Just the other day, I forgot where I was at, but I was dressed really nice. And this white lady came up to me and said, do you work here? I could have gone off, but I didn't. I basically looked at her and said, I wanted to work here, but they can't afford me. And so she looked and she finally realized what she was doing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I wanted Lucas to feel that and to know that this happens to me every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the flip side of that, right? So like when I told Melvin and I wrote about this in my letters, and like I grew up in, you know, poverty, and like I was a rough, you know, fit for society, you know, early on. And I got into college and essentially when I reflected back, this is the moment that really sort of clarified what white privilege is and how I had white privilege. Is like when I showed up and got myself together, I got accepted into college, and they didn't know my story. You know, they didn't know that I had spent my whole youth with shoes that had holes in them, and like with my tennis shoes, the bottom would start to peel off, so I'd glue it back together because I couldn't get another pair of shoes, you know, for, you know, another several months. They didn't know my shoes were red because I walked through the red dirt, and I couldn't, you know, like there's just, I went through a bunch of things where I was not somebody who looked like they belonged. And when I dusted myself off, as I use as a metaphor, and put on the nice clothes and showed up, and no one knew otherwise, like they just assumed that I belonged there. And I just kind of, I used the metaphor of putting on the jacket of privilege, and I was there, and I was what, and I had no idea this was happening to me, but I just walked into all the opportunities that come to someone who, you know, looks the part, and, you know, you clean up and just a strapping young white male ready to come in and, you know, take my privilege and be there. And everything kind of folded into, you know, into my lap, and I was able to go be successful despite my, you know, challenging upbringing. And that range from like just appearances and ability to speak or whatever, just as soon as I made it look good, I was in. And that was privilege to me. And part of understanding that unwound over the time of writing these letters, I didn't understand it when I started. But as I put it together, that's what crystallized for me, is like the privilege I have of just walking in. I would never, you know, have to deal with what Melvin had to deal with. You know, it's just privilege and understanding, and saying, okay, I'm ahead. Let me have a conversation with Melvin about like how we can break some of those boundaries down and have, you know, everyone have the same starting spot, right? And I'm not going to solve it all with my letters, but I can certainly help by acknowledging it and having a conversation and starting on a journey.
Lucas, remember when you were talking about, you know, your white privilege? Even then, I basically said to you, are you sure it was white privilege? Are you sure?
Mm.
Or was it your hard work?
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas came back. He said, no, it was white privilege, because you wouldn't be able to get what I got.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and it's just like, it's so true. Yeah. And I, you know, like I just think we have to acknowledge that and try to make it so that that's not a factor, right? And in again, we're taking baby steps as individuals, just two guys working on it. But that's how you make change, and you do this, we do it, and two others, and two others, and two others, right? That's how it happens. Yeah. And this is, so, like, the last thing I want to do is tell somebody not to take action because they feel like the problem's too big. Like, get in there and do it and make some action happen. And white people need to sort of get off their butts and stop being afraid that they don't belong there, that they're the deadbeat dad, and just get in there and do it and take a step, just one step, and then that leads to another. And then suddenly you're making a difference.
I don't think, honestly, we're not telling people to go do this. I will say that for the both of us. We're really not telling people to go do this. We're just telling people what we did. This is what we did during
a
time where it was crazy. You guys all remember it. We know where we were, what was going on. And I don't want people to think that we're out here trying to say, well, this is what you should do. No. If you decide not to do anything, that's totally on you. Okay,
that's your choice.
And we're going to be okay with it, but our world won't be. But we're not trying to tell you to do this. We're just trying to show you this is how it happened. We were strangers, and look where we are now. Yeah. we're on a speaking circuit talking about this because we now know so many people want to talk yes. about this issue. I say funny, Lee, that all of the talking heads you see on television, all of the people who are in this sphere who do this for a living, you know, they're talking mm-hmm. about we need to listen to each other, we need to listen to each other. But then it dawned on me, nobody's talking to each other. No one is really, and I said this to Lucas, they're like, no one is really yeah. asking the hard questions, hitting the potholes, hitting the landmines to get yeah. through the other side so we really get to know each other. And the only way that we're going to do that is we've got to ask those hard questions. And you've got to get angry, mm-hmm. but you got to come from mm-hmm. a place of learning and love.
Yeah. Can I just say, you're saying where it's not, we're not telling them to go do this, but we're certainly asking them to consider having conversations with somebody at some level. Yeah. Like, at least for me, I think, especially for white people, like, this is something that white people should get started on and have a conversation. So don't necessarily do this, everything we've done, but like have some conversations and have meaningful mm-hmm. reflection. And I want to just say something that's important to call out that I don't think we've really hit on, which is like, I cannot say how amazing this journey has been just for me in as a cathartic kind of thing. Like I feel, I don't feel like I've accomplished, like solved the problem or anything like that. I'm not trying to say that, but just like the act of taking an action just changes mm-hmm. how you feel about this. Like you feel like you're doing something, even if it's small steps to do something that's one step leads to another, like I say, but just the sheer act of changing from someone who's sitting there passively knowing something's wrong and doing nothing to like getting involved and saying something, taking action. It just changes how you feel about yourself because
yeah,
you feel like you're being part of something and not as much as part of the problem. And so there's obviously tons of work to do, so far to go, all those things. But like the sheer act of getting involved and doing something will change how you feel about yourself and your role in this. And for white people, like hear that, because you have this opportunity. You don't have to be sitting on the fences. Like that's mm-hmm. it will change how you feel about yourself in addition to making a positive impact.
And for me, I would really like to encourage African-American people to be willing to talk to white people about it, because I know that it's not your responsibility. I know that you don't have to do any of this, but you've got the history. You've got the legacy. You could show them the things, show them what you go through every day so that they can understand. And I am very honored that Lucas allowed me into his life to help him grow. Now, I may not be able to do this with anybody else ever again, but at least I know that there's one ally out there who is not afraid to go into his circles and talk yes. about this, which he did, but I'll leave mm-hmm. that on the book. Went into his circles and talked about this issue. They wanted to run him out of there, but that's okay. They talked about it. Yeah, because we've got to start someplace, and you can't be afraid.
Yeah. Good. I'm going to share this episode with my social justice and leadership class, because these are the conversations we've been having, and some of the questions that they've had is, well, what do I do? The problem seems so big. It seems like I don't, you know, just my little piece in it is not going to work. So I love that you all are answering these questions and having this conversation with you, like reading my mind, right? With all of the things that I want to ask, but you're just going ahead and talking about them. So I love this. And I'm going to have to definitely share this with my social justice and leadership class. But Lucas, so Dr. Melvin Murphy just said that you were run out of somewhere. Tell us.
We need to make her buy the book on that one. No, go ahead.
I just share.
You're saving that for the book. We can't okay.
do. just to say that there's, you know, it's a work. Like you feel like you've gone on this journey and you've been doing all this work and you want to share, and people are like, oh, you know, so tell like you have to then start again and just, you know, with each time. And so it's find the energy from the work you've done and take it on the road, as you will.
Lucas, go ahead and tell them about the party, when you went to the party.
You know, we can leave it as a cliffhanger, because I'm going to buy the book And then when this episode airs and all of that, we're going to have this huge giveaway and all of this, this celebration for sure about your work. Okay. So we can save it for the cliffhanger if you want. Okay. And then, yeah, we can definitely do that. I'm just so excited about this.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But you see that, Dr. K, that feeling that you're feeling right now and the excitement that you are feeling right now, this has been the response since we finished writing the book and we started talking about it. There's so many people out there who want to talk about this stuff.
Absolutely.
Right? And that they're afraid. I think, you know, Lucas and I got phone calls last week, and Lucas, I'd rather you talk about your phone call that you got after we finished the speech last week and what that did to you coming from a white person.
Yeah. And this is in reference to what I spoke about earlier. We had a talk and there was just a lot of people were very moved by it. And one of the organizers took the step to call and talk to me and say like how much they felt that everyone was moved. But her personal like reflection was that she felt like she had a path to take some action. Right. And it was just like, you know, a touching moment where so Melvin has, talked a lot to a lot more to different people about it in his circles of, you know, being on boards and all this other stuff as Dr. Melvin Murphy, the guy who's way in touch with a lot of people. And so he's been telling me like people are really responding to this, and I'm like, in my more insular sort of world, I haven't had as much conversation. And so like, it was really touching to see someone just out call me and say, you know, you moved me, like your story moved me to a place and I didn't think I could, you know, and her journey, you know, be moved like that. So it was just impressive. And I think Melvin's right. There is a sense that people are ready to have these conversations and have an entry point into it that is accessible. And it feels like it's something they can do without having to like be an expert or solve the whole problem. Just like having a way to get started is powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I am so, I'm just elated that you answered the call, one, and that you agreed to be on the podcast as well so we could talk about these things. Before we sign off, is there anything we need to unpack or talk about that we haven't yet that you definitely have to say, this is the takeaway or this is what I want you to know or anything that we didn't cover that we definitely need to before we get off?
Well, one thing I will say is if two strangers can come together to talk about such a hot topic, a mind-filled topic, mind-land-filled topic to make change for the better, then you can too. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is want to.
Yeah.
Get past your fear and just have conversations. Don't make it a big giant deal. Just start doing something and you'll be amazed. Like it'll be very powerful and just, it's right there. It's very accessible and you know you want to. And so just do it.
Yeah. And two strangers from two very different backgrounds. Dr. Murphy is at the pinnacle of his education and has military background and an author. And Lucas comes from this background of putting tape and gluing his shoes together in a rural area and off the grid. And for you to find the bridge and the connection to say, let's have these conversations.
Well, I can do it. I can do it better for you. Lucas, we're different in every possible way. Lucas is tall. I am short. Lucas is white. I'm black. Lucas is married. I'm not. Lucas has kids. I don't. Lucas has one degree. I have four. Lucas is on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast. The only thing that we had in common is the fact that we were men, that we were human. That was it. That was it.
And you answered the call to have the conversation.
Yeah. You were willing to have the conversation.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So the book is. You didn't have a choice.
I just don't believe, because I'm having a hard time trying to explain to people how this actually happened. It just, I mean, it was some kind of divine intervention. I can't explain it. We're strangers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So the book is Crossing the Race Line, One Murder, Two Strangers, and the Journey to Healing and Change. So how can we find you? How can we know when this book launches and drops? Because I'm going to be the first to buy the first two copies, and I want them signed. I want them autographed. So then I can have this huge giveaway and celebration with my audience and all of our people here.
Yeah.
So they have this as
we
well.
We love that.
Yeah. So how do we find you?
Well, I'll just give you my website, and you can run everything through there. Even if you want to get to Lucas as well. That website is murphyeducationgroup.com. murphyeducationgroup.com. And if you have something for Lucas, I will make sure that he gets it, and vice versa. And we would love to come back when the book comes out. Hopefully it'll be done by the end of the year, if not sometime next year. But in the meantime, we're still working on it, trying to get it published.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I really thank you for spending time with me and spending time with us today. And if we can do anything to help you in the endeavors, please let us know. All of the information to contact Dr. Murphy and Lucas will be in the show notes. So you can just click links. You don't have to try to find and figure out, you know, the spelling and all of that. It'll be right in the show notes to connect with them. As we end our time, thank you for listening and watching. Please subscribe to the show. Share it with a friend, write a review, 5-star, you know, all the things that we do. Share on socials and all of those things. If you have an idea for a show or would like to be a guest on our show, then of course we invite you to reach out at hello@siennaandslate. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care and be well.
Thank you for having us.